Today on Stay Human, words and music celebrating the ways poetry and science work together to help us unlock the mysteries. Poetry and science, like two sisters sharing a bedroom, sometimes jealous and bickering, but always intimates, two parts of one whole. The world that forms us and our imagining of that world, it's an ongoing thought experiment.
He flew 100 miles, he busted through the speed of light. He came back a child, yes, he came back a child. Outer, dance around, outer, leap around, outer, let your hair stick out, your socks hang down. Until his eye was red, he looked through outer space and saw the back of his own head, saw the back of his own head. Albert, dance around, Albert, be profound, Albert, let your hair stick out, your socks hang down. I sat on a fence, Uncle Relative, he ain't seen a damn thing since. I ain't seen a damn thing since. Albert, dance around, Albert, be profound, Albert, let your hair stay out, your socks hang down. Side by side, one turned to the other, said, which one of us am I? Which one of us am I? Albert, dance around, Albert, be profound, Albert, let your hair stick out, your socks hang down. And you know, Albert played the fiddle, he loved to shout and sing. Now, that ain't genius, well, that ain't anything, no, that ain't anything. Albert, dance around, Albert, be profound, Albert, let your hair stick out, your socks hang down.
Albert the Genius, let your hair stick out, your socks fall down. I'm Michael Goldberg, and coming up in this hour, Steve Downing contemplates the poetry of E equals MC squared. Local poets Leah Lem and Aaron Wenger trade notes and poems, and Maggie Montgomery takes us with her to gaze at the night sky. We'll start out with Duluth-based poet Connie Wanick. She's written a whole cycle of poems written in the voice of Mrs. God. This one is called Intelligent Design.
Like someone from a small town in the Midwest, Mrs. God began. I don't mean to be critical, God braced himself, but honestly, the only thing keeping a peanut out of the lung is this little flapper. I can understand that approach in a toilet tank, but in Adam? That's why I added another lung, God explained. Mere redundancy, that's your answer? There were moments when even the couple grew exasperated. She had already noted the proximity of Adam's reproductive organs to the terminus of his digestive tract. I'm not starting over, God said flatly. And he didn't. After all, Mrs. God had favored the centaur. Charming, yes, but talk about duplication. Sometimes eons had to pass before they saw their mistakes with any clarity. Luckily, God thought, we have forever.
Connie Wanick, her Mrs. God poems are collected in her book, Consider the Lilies.
Your molecular structure is really really something fine. A first-rate example of functional design. Those cosmic undulations are steady coming through. Your molecular structure, baby, me and you. Your cellular organization is really something choice. Electromagnetism about to make me lose my voice. Got all my circuits open, my system's reading gold. Your cellular organization, baby, stop the show. Molecular structure is really something swell. A high frequency modulated Jezebel. Thermodynamically, you're getting to me. Your molecular structure, baby. Ooh-wee.
Our Bible reading for today is from Isaiah. All flesh is grass, and all its beauty is like the flowers in the field. It seems to me that this metaphor, all flesh is grass, is the foundation of the biological sciences, like to like. And the more we learn, for instance, how DNA, which is, after all, just a library of all life, that the DNA of humans demonstrates that truly we are brothers and sisters, and that we share more than 98% of our genes with chimpanzees. The more we learn, the more embodied our understanding of like to like. Like dreams, like language, science is built on metaphor. Of course, that's a pronouncement I am in no way qualified to make. At many universities that require all undergraduates to take some science courses, there's an introductory Physics 101 class that's popularly known as Physics for Poets. It's a relatively painless way for students in the humanities to fulfill their science requirement, a little less math and low expectations from the professor, or more likely from the teaching assistant. As far as I know, there's no equivalent Poetry for Physicists class, and only occasionally do the two disciplines break bread together. Contemporary American poet Sarah Howe has observed that the imaginative terrain of poets and of physicists overlaps, and this is most clear in the thought experiments that Einstein devised. Trains, clocks, elevators, the props of everyday life to lead us through the realm of the previously unthinkable. Sarah Howe wrote this sonnet dedicated to Stephen Hawking, entitled Relativity. When we wake up, brushed by panic in the dark, our pupils grope for the shape of things we know. Photons loosed from slits like greyhounds at the track reveal light's doubleness in their cast shadows that stripe a dimmed lab's wall, particles no more, and with a wave bid all certainties goodbye. For what's sure in a universe that Doppler's away like a siren's midnight cry? They say a flash seen from on and off a hurtling train will explain why time dilates like a perfect afternoon, predicts black holes where parallel lines will meet, whose stark horizon even starlight bent in its tracks, can't resist. If we can think this far, might not our eyes adjust to the dark? Sarah Howe, from her first poetry collection, Loop of Jade. Toggling now from subparticle physics back to the same mysteries at the macro level, here's Mary Oliver reading her poem, Wild Geese.
You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things.
Thank you.
Music from Astor Piazzolla, performed by the Kronos Quartet. Before that, Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. Here's another poem, this one by our staff physicist, Aaron Wenger, called Gut for Grand Unified Theory.
Sometimes, from behind all my beautiful equations, sprinkled among the pretty graphs, bubbling through the data sets, pouring like honey from computer orifices, I see a different set of constants hidden and framing this very usual world belighted by stone-cold logic. This very usual world, icy with reason, is edged with the fine calculus of numbers. It is finely persuasive and thoroughly understandable. This world, mostly void, is devoid of any spark past the casual de-excitation of bored atoms. This world, mostly darkness, is so deep in its nightmares, so complete in its spectral assurances, the questioners can only hope to ask hope from it. Could such an empty space-time suffice to fill out my equations and provide solutions of empty satisfaction? Yeah, physics abounds with such solutions. But look and see another world. This one's backlit with irrational ivory moonlight spilling over the hard rock of logic and hiding brave lovers among its shadows. We throw whole lives against the bare equations, fill whole worlds with our lovers and our demons and with our questions, dared time over time, and our children. Children still believe in dandelions.
Aaron Wenger, he may be the only poet for whom a college building dedicated to engineering and the sciences has been named, Wenger Hall at Itasca Community College. We'll hear more from Aaron later in this hour in conversation with local musician and poet Leah Lem. But first, another Grand Rapids-based poet and essayist, Steve Downing.
E equals MC squared. That is so poetic, it gives me the willies. You know it as Einstein's principle concerning the relationship of mass and energy measured in light years or however they do that. And I have no idea what E equals MC squared means to my journey through my world. That might partly explain why I choose to read it as poetry. You don't have to know what it means. E equals MC squared. There aren't even enough syllables in it to qualify as haiku. And yet, as a poem, it is perfection. Here's another so-called scientific principle that confirms, at least for this old poet, that there is plenty of poetry in science. DNA is the script which is already written. Shotgun sequencing. Is your science not big enough to dig it? Not poetry? Are you kidding me? Here's another. The R complex affects the dreams of dreaming humans as the dragons can be heard hissing and rasping and the dinosaurs thunder still. How evocative and provocative is that? Pure poetry. Here's another. A spider will spin its first spider web without training. And that first web, without fail, will mimic in every detail every web ever spun by any spider of that same spider species. You don't learn to write like that in biology class. Here's another. If an odd number divides an even number, then it also divides half of that number. That one sneaks up on you, doesn't it? Try this one. Probability theory involves discrete and continuous random variables and distributions which provide quantitative abstractions of non-deterministic processes or measured quantities. Wow, it's like reading Allen Ginsberg's long form poetry. Dense, but crazy good. Or this one. The modern science of electricity, and the electrical and electronic industries all trace their tracks back to 18th century experiments on the electrical stimulation of twitching in living frogs' legs. What I like about that one is the ending. You will never expunge the image of electrified, twitching, living frogs' legs. I've used the above examples without attribution. I don't want anyone else to get into trouble when I get something wrong, but I assure you, I could not make up a lick of that poetry. It was all penned by scientists. I am going to name one scientist here, Lewis Thomas. Lewis Thomas was an American scientist, a researcher and entomologist, policy advisor, a physician, and yes, a part-time poet. He died almost 30 years ago after a long life of doing all the things I just mentioned and more. I'll close this out here quoting directly from Lewis Thomas. Real meaning in music comes from tones, sounds only sounding in the corners of your mind. Now in Mahler's Ninth Symphony, the cellos sound in my mind corners like the opening of all the nuclear bomb hatches the world around the instant before ignition. As for thermonuclear war, any sensible defense analyst would be tempted to expense out all the expense items related to surgical care of the irradiated, burned, and blasted, the men, women, and children with empty bone marrows and vaporized skin. There is poetry in science, even as we contemplate the end of everything, including poetry and science, when E equals MC squared will finally mean nothing.
Steve Downing is a frequent contributor to this program. His essays can also be heard on Northern Community Radio's morning show. Here's a song from Minnesota musician Dessa, who in her essays and her music frequently draws on her fascination with the sciences. This is from her Broken Code CD, Into the Spin.
And if we choose to fall into lovely and brief with just gravity in me.
You are tuned to your Northern Community Radio service, broadcasting at KAXE and KBXE and streaming worldwide at KAXE.org. This essential service is made possible by the contributions of our listeners. Go to KAXE.org to join us. We also receive support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Our program is Stay Human, and on today's show, the poetry of science. The growing popular disregard, if not disdain, for the findings of scientists when they conflict with our desires or our beliefs, the refusal of evidence in favor of maintaining our illusions, now, as in the time of Galileo, has real-world consequences. Their immediate dangers have never been more obvious or more ominous. This is maybe another way that science and poetry overlap. To refuse the evidence, to believe that only what you can see is real, to be satisfied that your common sense is a true picture of the world, is, at bottom, a failure of the imagination. I wonder if someone doesn't believe in science, whether they can believe in poetry. It's a flat world. Two dimensions is fine, never mind three, or four, or seven dimensions. Poet Leah Lem explores these other dimensions in this poem.
Tesseract. Dearest unknown child, you will never shape spheres or propel woolen fibers glued to globes refreezing, arching rainbows of snowflakes, orbit facing inward. Dearest unknown child, you fall with me beyond speed of sound, ghosts heavy as lead.
Leah Lem, when she told me that much of her poetry was inspired by her training in physics and engineering, I was delighted to have the chance to introduce her to physicist poet Aaron Wenger. I got them together in our studios back when we could still do that, and Aaron asked her about her background.
Once upon a time, I wanted to be a scientist, so I went to school for it, and I was...
I may steal that line.
Please do. No. And so I just started in, and I loved it, but I couldn't quite hack it at the time. And then I studied economics, so still a lot of mathematics and everything like that. And then when I graduated, I was really into music. I've been a musician my entire life. And so at that point, I started studying music more, and I went to music school after going to engineering school. And becoming an economist, I went to music school and became an engineer. So I've been told I'm a walking contradiction, and I'm totally fine with that.
I don't find that strange at all. It seems to me that at its very best, the sciences try to discover a kind of poetry about the world. At its very best. Now, there's other parts where, all right, this wonderful poetry that came out of the standard model, let's say, winds up being akin to the technology that produces a cell phone. That's another thing. That's another thing. But in the origination of what came to be known as the standard model, certainly in the origination of general relativity at the far other end of the spectrum, there was a kind of beauty, poetry, if you want, about what people were doing there. And it's still true, I think, that what we try to see takes on a kind of poetry. Often has seemed to me that science bumps against, in its modern terms, bumps against a barrier where human words taken at face value don't work. Things like even saying particle don't work. The imagery that we humans have from that at our macroscopic view of things just doesn't work. If I was a physicist starting over and smarter than I ever was, I think I'd try to describe the nature of things in something else besides just mathematics, and it might be music. So I'm not surprised that you gravitated to that.
And it's funny because, so when I started doing my master's in poetry, I found that I drew a lot of language from science, and it almost kind of brought me back around to science, because I got into poetry because I wanted to, you know, learn how to tell a story and be a bit more expressive in my radio making.
Yeah.
But it ended up kind of veering off back around into the sciences.
Leah Lem, musician, poet, and radio producer. Here's another of her science-inspired poems.
Solar outage. Her face flowers and falls, seasons to his angling. I await her instruction coded in our dividing particles. Until the time of equalizing, he's the bringer of shade. I mirror her vibration. She buds into his face. At 22,000 miles, brim her dishes with radio waves. My voice turns white, mixed with his whisper. Three in our maneuvering, I suspend fixed to her.
Music of the spheres. Don't know, we'll never know through this life of physics. We'll never find among the equations an answer to which is the greatest blessing and the greatest curse. Hearing the music played through my midnight dreams or performing the calculation in the bright light of day. Ah, but I do know with icy certainty that both music of the spheres and the calculus of the equations have led me, tortured me, driven me, through a lifetime of awe, wonder, and fear that I would not exchange for faith.
Thanks to Aaron Wenger and Leah Lem. I hope to get those two poets together again sometime to help us explore all the dimensions.
Thank you.
Bach's Cello Suite No. 5. For many physicians, like Lewis Thomas and William Carlos Williams comes to mind, also Oliver Sacks, poetry is among the healing arts. Dr. Rafael Campo teaches and practices medicine at Harvard Medical School. He is also the poetry editor of the Journal of the American Medical Association. Here, he reads two of his poems.
This is a poem called The Mental Status Exam. What is the color of the mind? Beneath the cranium, it's pinkish-gray with flecks of white mixed in. What is the mind's motif? Depends on what you mean. It's either sex or it's a box, release or pessimism. Remember these three things: ball, sorrow, red. Count backward from 100 down by sevens. What is the color of the mind? It's said that love can conquer all. Interpret, please. And who's the president? What year is it? The mind is timeless, dizzy, unscrupulous. The mind is sometimes only dimly lit. Just two more silly questions. Can you sing for us? Do you remember those three things? This is a poem called Incidental Finding. The sun through green leaf's flesh recalls the X-ray. Inner structures seen, but imprecisely, branching veins and something like planned avenues, all leading to the source of what we never cease to seek. Too few, too momentarily alight, these chance encounters with the truth. The X-ray that permitted me to see both into you and through the glowing silhouette of your soft tissues like the swaddling soul still diagnoses it. A mass, the radiologist in me could not help noting first, and then your failing heart, terribly large.
Poetry by Dr. Rafael Campo. My friend Maggie Montgomery is neither scientist nor poet, but in her day job as general manager of Northern Community Radio, she manages to combine the rigor and discipline of a scientific mind with the open heart and imagination of a poet. She offers us these thoughts on one of her lifelong fascinations.
This is an essay about astronomy, cosmology, astrophysics, and metaphysics. It starts with my dad and me, outside by ourselves, sitting in lawn chairs in the front yard of our rental house, looking up at the sky. It's summer. My mom isn't in this picture because she didn't like looking at the stars. She said the vastness of the sky scared her. It made her feel small. So this was something special my dad and I shared together. We sat down by the sidewalk so the house lights wouldn't bother us. I was 10 years old, going into fourth grade. He was an engineer for General Motors. We were checking out the constellations and waiting to see Echo. "There's the Big Dipper," my dad said. "Those stars at the front of the Dipper are the pointer stars. If you follow them, they're pointing at the North Star, which is the first star in the handle of the Little Dipper." I learned about constellations from my dad. And then, "Do you see it? It's moving there. That's it. That's Echo." I followed where he was pointing. I could see it moving slowly across the sky, so small and so high up. Echo was a communication satellite. It was part satellite and part balloon, a satelloon. Its big reflective surface meant you could see it with the naked eye. It launched 5 years after Sputnik. The space race was on, and the Cold War. A commemorative postage stamp for Echo said, "Communications for Peace." My dad and I were in favor of that. We were in favor of NASA, the idea of a civilian space agency. My dad and I sometimes dreamed of getting a telescope, but we never did. He said, "If you're a real citizen astronomer, you make a commitment to study the sky and follow certain objects. You take notes, make comparisons." With five kids in our house, that wasn't going to happen. But I still loved the stars. I devoured science fiction and read popular science books. books like Isaac Asimov's The Collapsing Universe and Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time. I bought the Time Life collection, Voyage Through the Universe, for my kids and me. We had star charts and star finders. I read up on the physical forces, like the ones inside the nuclei of atoms, the electromagnetic force, the weak force, and gravity. There's density, tidal effects, and escape velocity, and the amazing weirdness of white dwarfs, pulsars, neutron stars, and black holes. The dark skies of northern Minnesota were, and are, a star watcher's paradise. I'm not a scientist, and most of this isn't practical information that you use every day, but the universe is full of mysteries. As a curious person looking in and up, it seemed like the point of all this science and physics and studying of stars and atoms and forces was to figure out what will ultimately happen to the universe. What is its and our fate? Is the universe open or closed? Will there ultimately be a big crunch, a big bounce, a big slurp, a big rip, or a big freeze? Because of COVID, I recently saw my dad on FaceTime. I asked, "Do you remember that night when we were out in the yard and we were looking for Echo?" "What?" "Echo, the satellite." He didn't remember. Not the time, not the satellite. To be fair, he's almost 97. My loving, smart dad, who shared so much with me, is fading. Sometimes he goes in his bedroom at night and comes back hours later to ask whether he was going to bed or waiting for dinner. These days, like most of us, my brain has given over to very earthly pandemic thinking. This is harder than musing about the fate of the universe, whose ultimate demise is far off and almost poetic in comparison. While the constellations wheel above us, I'm worrying more about other loves, my family, my friends, my coworkers, my country, our democracy, and my dad. I still hope science can help us, but these uncertain times make me feel more like my mom did when she looked up at the stars. I'm glad scientists are looking for the dark matter, the dark energy, and the grand unified theory of everything. I still want to know, in my layperson's way, the answers to the cosmic questions. What is the nature of the universe? What is going to happen? Eventually, like all human beings, I will fade too, which makes me think less about physics and more about metaphysics. What is the nature of knowing and being, the meaning of life and living? And when we die, do we go back to the same mystery we came from?
Whenever life gets you down, Mrs. Brown, and things seem hard or tough, and people are stupid, obnoxious, or daft, and you feel that you've had quite enough, just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. That's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour, the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Our galaxy itself contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. itself keeps on expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, at the speed of light, you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, 'cause there's bugger all down here on Earth.
From the Monty Python Institute for the Advanced Study of Ridiculous Phenomena, that's our Poetry of Science edition today for Stay Human. I'm Michael Goldberg, here at this time every week with words and music for spirit and courage. Thanks to Maggie Montgomery and to Steve Downing, to local poets Connie Wanick, Leah Lem, and Aaron Wenger for being part of the show today. We also heard poems from Mary Oliver, Susan Howe, and Rafael Campo. To explore the mysteries of the universe, Lewis Thomas says it's important to listen to the music of Bach, and like to like, the same would hold true for Thelonious Monk. Stay tuned. Up next, jazz on America Avenue.